kidding.
Drives her out of the house.
Are you kidding? I've been exposed to that thing for
60-something
years.
Yeah, it's another 10 minutes.
Yeah, right.
All right. So we're just getting other people in the room.
Okay.
So it won't look like Bill's just talking to himself. You know?
Yeah, if you want us to get out, just tell
us. Oh, no.
No, it's okay. I don't want to interview.
Okay. We're good.
Okay, so it's September 15th, 2010, and we're in Gig Harbor, Washington, talking with Lieutenant Bill Thies.
I was lieutenant back in 1942.
What was your N rank? I'm off
I
to
a ended up with a captain.
Captain.
You didn't know that?
You know what? I did know that because you went on to be a commanding officer of VPB 144, right?
Uh-huh. Well, I was lieutenant commander then, but I retired as a captain.
Okay. Yeah. My apologies.
That's the bird. Birds on each side.
Okay, there. The silver ones? Yeah. Okay. And I'm Janice Kozlowski with the National Park Service, and Janet Clemens is also here with the National Park Service. And could you say who you are both are too?
Yes, Don Reed. I'm son-in-law to Bill Thies.
I'm Nola Reed, Bill Thies' daughter.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's start from a bit of the beginning of your military service. I think you were born in 1917, right?
Right.
And when did you actually enter military service?
1938.
And what compelled you to enter at that point?
Good story. My hero back in those days was Charles Lindbergh, and I decided after hearing all about him that I wanted to learn how to fly. So I went to University of Maryland to get a degree in engineering, which you had to have back in those days to go to flight school. So one day at the university, this airplane lands on the football field. And a good friend of mine that used to be on the track team with me got out, his whites, his wings. He says, "Bill, I'm recruiting." He says, "Why don't you join the Navy Air Force? I said, never the Navy had any. I was pointing towards the Army Air Corps at that time. So I signed up. That's the way I went to Pensacola, Florida, and got my wings.
So he convinced you to switch over to the Navy?
Yeah.
Did you think you might have an opportunity to fly a certain type of airplane that you...
Oh, I had no idea then. In fact, when I finished flight training, I wanted to be a fighter pilot. And they said, "No, you're going to seaplanes. Don't have much choice."
Well, that explains why you ended up being using the PBY as sort of like a fighter airplane.
Right. Probably saved my life.
So were you happy that you chose the Navy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Where were you assigned first? Where did you go?
Sandpoint Naval Air Station, Seattle. You ever seen it out there?
No.
It used to be a seaplane base. That's where I learned to fly the PBYs.
First of all, what kind of training did they give you?
In the PBY?
Even before that, because you didn't have your
pilot's
license,
in
right?
Pensacola, where we went to flight school, we trained in everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was it good enough training to transition easily to a PBY or another airplane?
Sure. Yeah, we trained in seaplanes down there.
Mm-hmm. How about instrument training and flying in inclement weather?
Well, we didn't get to that till later on.
Not till you hit the Aleutians, right?
Amen.
And then you were on your own. Did they actually train you in the Aleutians in the airplane you flew?
Oh, our training was done before we went up there. Yeah. We were instrument qualified when we went up there. Mm-hmm. Praise the Lord.
So did you feel very qualified for the type of conditions you encountered?
Never.
So some of your flights might have been a bit frightening.
Oh. I don't know how to explain that. As you have heard, probably the Aleutian weather to fly in is the worst in the world. As an example, we take off one night and we get up to around 2,000 feet, and I told the radar operator, I said, let me know when we pass a certain point. And after about 10 minutes, I said, Harvey, why am you giving me a call? He says, I don't know, Bill. He says, we're standing still over the land. There was an air current which was 110 knots, and we were flying right into it, and that made the plane stay right here. I said, well, I'll find out. I told my co-pilot, I said, do a 180, and we went off the scope just at 200 miles an hour. God awful weather.
And you probably didn't know when you took off on any given day what you would encounter.
Well, we had a fair idea. We had a good aerologist in the squadron, and he was pretty good. We had some reports that would come in from two or three guys on Kiska at the time, which was way west of Dutch Harbor, and they would radio us what the weather was like.
So you had a little bit of an idea.
A little bit, yeah.
Do you remember who your aerologist was?
John Tatum.
John Tatum? So where did you go when you first went to Alaska? Did you take your aircraft up from Sandpoint?
Yes, our first duty actually in the Aleutian was out of Kodiak. And in fact, when we went out there, I took my wife with me.
Oh.
She was in Kodiak with me.
Did they have housing for both of you? Or?
Yeah, we had quarters. Uh-huh.
How did she like Kodiak?
I don't think I know the answer to that.
Were you actually on Kodiak very much, or that was just your base?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit. And when the war started, we went back to the States because we had an idea that the Japanese would attack somewhere on the West Coast. So we flew patrols out of Tillamook, Oregon, and then we went back to the Aleutians. That's when we went out to Dutch Harbor.
Okay. So when you were on Kodiak, what kind of missions were you flying?
We were looking for the Japanese fleet.
So you flew sectors each day looking to find them? And what did you find?
You really want to know this story? We were about, I don't know, 200-300 miles south of Kodiak, and I see this big ship, and I look, holy cow, there's a a Japanese battleship. I called that in to the Kodiak. They all went to general quarters. And there was a Lieutenant J.G. flying alongside of me. And he was a Naval Academy graduate. I wasn't. And he called me up and said, Bill, I said, we're going to bomb that big Japanese cruiser. And I started up to 10,000 feet. And I was on a run to bomb it. And my guy on the wing said, Bill, don't drop, don't drop. That's one of our destroyers. And they had left Pearl Harbor without the codes, because every time I'd query them or send an Aldous lamp light signal, they wouldn't answer. So I suspected they were Japanese. Later on, the skipper of that destroyer and I met in Kodiak, and he said, Bill, you just had the shit scared out of me.
Your life would have been a lot different if that had happened, right?
Good boy.
I felt pretty sheepish. Couldn't tell the difference between a little destroyer and a Japanese battle cruiser.
Well, did you actually encounter Japanese ships or aircraft in any of these patrols?
Well, when we were flying patrols to Kiska out of Dutch Harbor, well, in fact, we weren't in Dutch Harbor, we were on another island out there where we were taken off from. That's when I got attacked a few times by Zeros.
Oh. The float type Zeros?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that must have been a little frightening in a slow lumbering PBY with a plane like that coming after you.
Well, as the Lord would have it, He blessed me with a tactic. The Japanese Zero float plane would get on our tail to attack, okay? Well, there was a little island, maybe 200-300 foot tall, a couple miles in diameter. So what I did, I went, got right on the, right down close to the water, like 10 feet off the water, and started to circle that island. And the Japanese Zero would come in to make an attack. Just about the time he was ready to fire, I was in a turn, and he had to break off or hit the water. And he did that two or three times and went home.
Oh. So was that something you learned, or was it instinctual?
Survival of the fittest.
Yeah. So was the PBY a good airplane for what you were trying to do?
The best.
Were you happy you got assigned to that airplane?
As long as I had to fly something, that was the best airplane to fly. It was very, very reliable. Mm-hmm. Had two Pratt & Whitney R1830 engines, which all I ever had to do every couple hundred hours was change the spark plugs and off we go. Great airplane.
Did you pretty well fly the same one all the time?
Yeah, I had one assigned to me, if it was flyable, mm-hmm. not in for maintenance or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Did it have any bad characteristics?
I can't think of any. It was just a marvelous airplane.
Now, what about all the activities that you were ended up doing in a PBY, which weren't really what that plane was designed to do, like bombing and...
Well, yeah. It was designed for reconnaissance. And we ended up using it for bombing and hanging torpedoes on the wings. Thank the goodness I never had occasion to do that. Some of my buddies weren't so fortunate.
Well, how many missions did you end up flying? Do you remember?
In the Aleutians?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness. That would be hard to guess. But I'd say we put in, 500 hours maybe total, something like that.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of flying hours in some pretty...
Well, the airplane flew 18 hours on a mission.
Without refueling?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't realize it had that long of a range.
Oh, yeah.
That's more than a person can handle, really. What did you do?
Well, we never actually went the 18 hours. Most of them were ended up like 14, 15. But it could stay up for 18 hours.
That's still a very long mission.
And what we do is throttle back, just run about 90 miles an hour, just hanging on the propellers.
Kind of minimum controllable airspeed.
That would stretch the fuel out. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So didn't that get boring flying up there?
Hmm?
Didn't it get boring all those hours?
All the time.
Especially for a young guy, that must have gotten a little old. What did you do to pass the time?
Well, that wasn't hard to do. I mean, you know, we were constantly on watching the radar, and if we could see the water, we had our binoculars out looking. It wasn't easy to pass time. It was real easy to pass the time.
Okay. So you were in the Aleutians when Dutch Harbor was bombed, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Were you anywhere near Dutch Harbor?
I was in a foxhole.
On Kodiak?
And Dutch Harbor.
Oh, you were?
Oh, yeah. I was there during the first attack.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So where were you holed up in your foxhole? Where was your airplane at the time?
It was sitting on the ramp someplace, getting shot up.
Do you remember where your foxhole was?
No
idea. What part of town?
No idea.
How much time did you spend at Dutch Harbor?
I don't know the answer to that. We weren't there too long. When things really began to get hot, we moved out to, I can't remember the name of the island.
Was it Atka?
Yeah, Atka. Yeah, that's it. That's where we were refueling and taken off. It was much closer to Kiska than Dutch Harbor.
So Dutch Harbor was never really your base. You were just in
Not
and out
really,
there.
Not really, no.
I was curious about whether you ever had any contact with or any recollection of the native people that lived at Dutch Harbor at the time.
No.
Or Atka, or
no.
Anywhere.
No.
They never came around. And
close as I ever came to that, we did some rescue missions on the Aleuts to get them away from the Japanese.
Oh. Do you remember which islands you took them on?
Yeah. It was... It was about 40 miles east of Kiska. Can't remember the name of it.
Not Amchitka, there weren't.
Yeah, I think it was Amchitka. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
So you took some of them off there and brought them back to Dutch Harbor?
Yeah.
Okay.
We had an American submarine go aground at Amchitka. You remember that? Hear about that? The chief engineer on the submarine ended up living close to me when I was in California. He had an egg farm. And we were assigned to go out and destroy the submarine. But we didn't want to fall in Japanese hands, only 40 miles from where they were, you know. We had a, it was about a 10-gallon jar, glass jar of nitroglycerin aboard the PBY, and it was in a cradle with bungee cords so it wouldn't explode. We landed at Amchitka, and just after we landed, and I put the party aboard a little rubber raft to go and blow up the submarine, this Japanese four-engine flying boat came over. And I left the party there that was going to blow up the submarine and got the hell out of it as fast as I could go. Somebody else had to come back the next day and pick up the party.
Did the Japanese airplane actually come in and do any damage on that run?
No. It was real foggy, and it couldn't see like that. It only could see straight down. It just didn't see us, so we were lucky.
Sounds like you had a lot of luck on your side.
We did.
Let me ask you about the bombing of Dutch Harbor again before we get too far away. What was it like to be there at that point? Did you recognize that the Japanese were coming in? Where were you when you found out?
That's pretty hard to try to remember.
Okay. It sounds like you were involved in the bombing of Kiska to try and get the Japanese off.
Yes,
were you
ma'am.
Also involved in any of the Attu?
No, never did the Attu thing.
Okay. Can you tell me about what happened? What was your experience on Kiska?
Well, the commanding officer of the squadron said, "Bill, we think there's Japanese on Kiska Island, but we're not sure. So go out there and take a look." So we get out there. And I duck in out of the fog bank and look down there, and there was the whole Japanese fleet. Two Japanese cruisers, about 12 destroyers, and a whole bunch of transport ships. So I go back up in the clouds and radio Kodiak, the wing commander. Contact, Japanese enemy ships in Kiska Harbor. And I thought, I've done my job. I'm going to get the hell out of here and get back. I turned around and started off. About 5 minutes in the flight, a plain language message comes over the radio. Very unheard of. We were supposed to keep radio silence, you know, or in code. This was plain language from Commodore Gary's. You've heard of Gary's. Mm-hmm. Personal call sign to my personal call sign. Bomb enemy shipping in Kiska Harbor. The radioman came up with that message to where I was sitting in the cockpit. He had a .45. I said, "Harvey, put the damn gun away. What are you going to do?" He says, "Look at this message. You ain't going to do this, are you?" I said, "Harvey." So I got with Bob Larson, the navigator. I said, "We got to figure out some way to save our necks when we carry this order out." And Bob thought for a while. He said, "I have a good idea." He said, "We'll duck down out of the clouds, and there's a big spit, which was very predominant on Kiska." He says, "I'll find out exactly how far it is from that spit to where the fleet is. And when we pass over that with the radar, knowing where we were, he says, I'll time it. And when we get over to the main body of the fleet, I'll tell you, I'll call you up. We'll drop the bombs manually. That's what we did. That was the first radar bombing ever carried out.
Do you have any idea if you were successful?
Oh, yeah. I got a picture of the ship we sunk. It was a Japanese transport. That's what when Gary's awarded me the Navy Cross.
And you got back safely from that?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, did they train you to do that? I mean, did you know what to do that day?
We had no idea what we were doing.
You just had to figure it out.
Larson came through. He was the greatest.
And so you were only, what, 21 or 22 years old at the time when you were doing
that?
1942
from 1917. How old was I? 22?
Yeah. That you're a pretty young guy to be making all those decisions and figuring out those tactics, and that's pretty amazing. Do you think, you know, you had a lot of hours in that PBY. You were doing bombing runs, things that were unprecedented. Many people, I'm sure, you lost a lot of crews down there. What do you attribute your successes to?
Just dumb luck. When you're at that age, you don't think much about saving your own life.
Yeah.
We lost 9 crews out of 12 airplanes in the first 30 days, mostly due to weather. Wow. I was one of the lucky ones to come through. One of the reasons for that is I defied orders. When we come into Dutch Harbor or wherever, we're supposed to send an in report so that it would let the people on the ground know that we're friendly. The PBY generators would not carry the radar and the radio transmitter at the same time. Just too much current. So what I would do, I'd turn off the radio so I could have my radar man tell me how to get through the pass. And when I would do that, not send an in report to identify myself, the whole base would go to alert. I get on the ground and the commanding officer called me up and said, damn it, Bill, you did it again. Next time I'll court-martial. I said, thank you, I can go back to state. That never happened. But the guys that would send the in report, with 2 or 3 of them that crashed into the mountains coming into Dutch Harbor. They turned it off the radar, which was stupid.
Too many mountains and obstacles in there.
You've seen the area.
Yeah.
Like Ballyhoo was one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That would be dangerous to do it, that to lose your navigation at that critical time.
That was another piece of dumb luck. Young and foolish.
Well, how about some of the other places that you landed? Dutch Harbor was a pretty tricky place to get into in bad weather, right? But what about some of the other places
well,
you landed?
What was the name of the island? Atka.
Nazan Bay?
Nazan Bay. Oh, man. That was one of the most... Oh. Excuse me. Shudder now to think about it. We came in from a run on Kiska. Into Nazan Bay, and we were totally on radar, right down on the deck. And the radar man could pick out the big rocks that he'd guide me around. And finally we got into Nazan Bay and landed, and we couldn't see anything. And Norm Garten was on a destroyer. He was the same skipper that I almost bombed out of Kodiak.
On the Gillis?
Norm Garten was the commanding officer of a destroyer in there. And I knew that. I got on the radio and I said, "Hey, Norm, turn on the searchlight, tag where am I at?" And he called back and said, "Bill, we just had a Japanese submarine torpedoed the Casco, which was a
tender,
yeah." And he said, "I'm going to turn on the searchlight for about 2 seconds. You better damn well find your way." He did. I knew where I was. I could see the Casco up on the beach.
How else would you have found a mooring buoy in that?
No way.
Yeah.
But what we did, we came up astern of the Casco to refuel and put new torpedoes. It was on the beach, so Gary's came down with his megaphone and said, "Bill, what are you doing with those torpedoes hanging on your wings?" I said, "I didn't feel like dropping them and reloading tonight. Give the crew a rest." "Good thinking, Bill."
Because that wasn't the practice, right? You were supposed to drop them before you landed.
Yeah. You probably might have heard the story. He gave me a box of cigars for bringing the torpedoes back.
I've heard a little bit of it, Bat, about that. So he was pretty proud of you making that decision.
Yeah, he was, yeah. Gave the crew a rest. Got some sleep that night, took off the next morning. We had the torpedoes already aboard.
And a slightly easier day than another, right? You had a little less to do. Did you fly with the same guys all the time?
Did what?
Did you fly with the same crew all the time?
Mostly. Sometimes it changed a little bit, but mostly, yeah.
Do you remember who the guys were? Or some of the more memorable ones?
Can you cut that thing off for a minute? I'll show you the crew. I think I can find it.
Were you taking pictures?
Yeah, forgot to bring my camera. So.
That's a heck of a loud picture taker.
Yeah. For a cell phone?
Too loud.
That's amazing.
You have a phone?
I do. Yeah.
Well, it's too loud.
We'll send you some pictures.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah. We can send you a copy of this too.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, that's
taking
me.
Yes, ma'am.
There we are.
I don't know.
Well, you got, you scanned your flight logs, huh? Or are those on, are your flight logs online?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen those. That's okay.
I can't find them now.
That's okay. Did any of them turn out to be kind of lifelong friends? Did you keep in touch with any of them?
Of course, Bob Larson was the main one I kept in touch with. And George Raptus, who was one of the enlisted men that actually saw the Zero for the first time. You've heard that story.
Well, I would like to hear it again.
Well, we were flying over Akutan. We'd gotten lost that night, and we had no idea where we were. And it was real rough air. And George got sick. And the PBY has those blisters, you know, they open up to fire the machine guns. So he opened up the blister to heave over the side. He was heaving over the side. He picked up a microphone and he says, "Bill, bank hard left." There was the Zero.
Wow.
Dumb luck that we found it.
Did you know what it was when you saw it?
Oh yeah, it had big, great big red balls on the wings. It was upside down and we could see the insignia.
But you didn't land immediately, right?
Oh, we couldn't land there, no, no way. So I went back to Dutch Harbor and I told the skipper, Foley, you probably heard of Paul Foley. Hey, okay, Bill, that's good. There's a crashed airplane on Akutan, so what? I said, Paul. Almost got court-martialed for calling him by his first name. I said, that plane is salvageable. Let me take a party and go over there and see what we can do. We argued and argued and argued. He said, you're due for flying tomorrow morning. I said, I know, but I think this is more important. So he finally gave in, and he let us take a party over to Akutan. And we hiked in, and there was the Zero. All we were able to do was get the body out of the airplane. You've seen pictures of the Koga.
Mm-hmm.
And a real salvage party came in later to get the plane off the beach and back to Dutch Harbor.
Mm-hmm. When did you recognize the significance of your find?
Not really until we finally, after several months, when it was put together and flown, you know, that we heard about the fact that its incapability of doing certain maneuvers just by word of mouth. We didn't know how important it was.
Mm-hmm. But word did get back to the Aleutians about...
Yeah, we heard about it later on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You must have felt pretty good about your involvement in that. And
yeah, we did.
Yeah.
I think the most... there was a quotation from a Japanese admiral, head of the Japanese Strategic Air Defense Forces, which said, the find of the Japanese Zero, you've probably seen that on my webpage, was as significant as the defeat of the Japanese at the Battle of Midway.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was after they found out what the Zero would not do, the word went out to the fleet and it turned the air war right around. We were starting to shoot them down. What happened was, the Zero could not make a high-speed diving left-hand turn. Had something to do with the torque of the propeller. So, when a Japanese Zero got on the tail of one of our fighters repeal off make a high-speed diving left-hand turn, and the Japanese couldn't follow him. It went on this way, and then we would come up behind and shoot him down.
And we didn't know that before, so
not,
that...
Not before we found the Zero. Yeah, that was pretty lucky.
So is that one of your prouder moments of your time in the Aleutians? Is that one of the things that you...
I've been proud of that from the day we found it till today. And
for good reason.
The Navy Department never even said thank you.
So none of these medals were for that?
No.
No. Well, can we talk about your medals and decorations here?
Sure.
What did you get them for?
Well, of course, the main one's the Navy Cross. That's the blue and white, top left.
This one?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And that's what Gary's awarded me for bombing the transport in Kiska Harbor. The rest of them are just... Oh, Distinguished Flying Cross and Air Medal.
Is that this one? Distinguished Flying Cross?
Yeah.
And then these are your Air Medals?
No, the Air Medal is third from the right on top.
This one?
No, keep all the way up the top.
Up here?
That's the Air Medal.
Oh, okay. So what are...
There's a legend down there.
Okay.
The rest of them are just nothing meritorious, just various campaigns.
Well, that's the most decorations I've ever seen.
Well, evidently you haven't seen some of the four-star admirals.
No, I haven't. That's a pretty impressive collection. I'm sure well-deserved. So did the fact that you lost friends and crews in the Aleutians, did that have an effect on you as a young man? Did it make you fearful?
Yeah. When you lose good friends, you can't help but shed a tear.
Yeah. Did it make you fearful about what you were doing in the Aleutians?
You're damn right it did.
Yeah.
I'm next.
You know, the kids today have these signs that say no fear, but they weren't doing what you were,
No. The
kinds of things you were doing. So do you think your experiences in the Aleutians changed you as a person or had an effect on your life in the long term?
Couldn't help but, yeah.
Do you know how so?
Well, I have nightmares every now and then, still.
About flying?
Well, the experiences up in the Aleutians, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was real hairy.
Yeah, it hardly seemed fair that some of the guys in the European theater, after a certain number of missions, were sent home, but in the Aleutians, you guys just had to stay and stay. Didn't matter how many hours you flew.
I tried a couple times, get court-martialed and sent home.
They must have seen right through that. Let me ask you just about kind of daily life in the Aleutians. What was it like? What were your, you know, in terms of sleeping, eating, any kind of recreation?
As far as eating is concerned, all I remember is we lived on Spam. And apples.
Spam and apples.
We'd be camped out, anchored out someplace away from the main base. A Yippie boat would come alongside and all it had was Spam and apples.
So you were pretty skinny in those days, right?
Yeah, I think I was about 160.
Oh, my.
That's what I am today.
Yeah. Young guys have to eat quite a bit, though, to keep them going.
Yeah.
Did you sleep aboard the tenders?
Never did, no.
Never did? Where did you stay?
Well, if we were on shore, there's the Quonset huts, and tents, or the airplane. Never was aboard the tender.
Okay.
Only time I was aboard the tender was when the casco was beached after getting the torpedo hit in Amtuka. Nathan Bay, yeah. Gary's called me aboard to have a cup of coffee with him. And I found out at that time, when the torpedo hit the casco, Gary's was in the wardroom having a cup of coffee, and the shock of the torpedo wave knocked him off the wardroom table, and as he was sliding off the table, he cut his hand and he bled. He awarded himself the Purple Heart for that.
I didn't know you could award yourself a Purple Heart.
That was one I never got, thank the Lord.
Yeah, that's not one you want to try and get. What kind of a guy was Gary's?
You better turn that thing off. A real asshole.
Was he?
He had a horrible reputation. He and I got along real well. But he was tough, real tough. Later on, you know, he was the commanding officer of the, I forget the name of the carrier that was attacked by kamikazes.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember the name.
He had an admiral aboard, and the admiral said, "I'm getting off." Gary says, "You're not." The admiral says, "Who the hell do you think you are? I'm getting off this damn ship." Gary stayed aboard with a firefighting crew, and he did save the ship. And the Navy Department couldn't figure out whether to court-martial him or award him the Navy Cross. They awarded him the Navy Cross.
So your wife was in Kodiak at least for a while when you were there. Stick around?
When we learned about Pearl Harbor, they evacuated all the women. She went aboard the USS Grant.
Oh.
It was troop transport.
Luxury ship.
And on the way out, I was flying patrol on the ship. I went up alongside and I could see my wife standing up there waving.
So did she head back to Seattle then?
Yeah.
Were you able to be in contact with her and let her know how you were doing?
No way.
So how much time went by before you ever got to see her or talk with her?
Oh. See, when was December the 7th was the attack. It wasn't until fall of next year before I ever got home.
So almost a year after.
Yeah, it was late in 42. Yeah.
She had no idea if you were okay or not.
No way.
No.
That's her picture.
Yeah, she's a beautiful lady. So did she wait for you in Seattle until you were finished? Mm-hmm. But you went on, after the Aleutians, you went on to the South Pacific or Central Pacific, right?
They made me the commanding officer of a PV Lockheed twin engine medium bomber. Maybe the skipper.
PB-1 or 2?
We started off with the 1s and eventually switched over to the 2s. I was the youngest commanding officer ever assigned.
Really?
Yeah.
How old were you?
This was in 43 or 44, so how old?
26, yeah. So you must have left the Aleutians somewhere around late 43, early 44, something like that?
I think it was late 42 or early 43.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. All right, okay. Were you happy to get out of Alaska?
Amen.
But given where you were going, was that a good... Given where you were going, was that...
Well, that's another story. I'm in Seattle. And I get a call from a skipper. He says, "You're going to San Diego." "What am I going to do down there?" He says, "It's top secret. You will find out." So I went to San Diego, and here is a relief map on a table with, you know, Kiska Island. I said, "What's this all about?" "Well, you're going to be assigned to the Colonel Frederick's Special Service Forces and go ashore in Kiska." Hey, come on. Anyway, we get to Kiska. I'm in charge of a radio communication outfit, which is supposed to go ashore and radio for air support. So we're sitting on the out in the harbor outside of Kiska, and there was a destroyer about 100 yards away that blew up all of a sudden. We had a whole man. The Japs hit him with a 5-inch shore battery. That was a little scary. So anyway, we go ashore at H-minus 5 hours or something like that, still dark, hit the beach. Hand grenades, carbine, 45, you name it. We hit the beach. The orders were to proceed east on Kiska Island until you meet the enemy. Well, before we got off the ship, reports were coming in that the people that had gone ashore ahead of us were having a fixed battle. It turned out what we found out later, the two sides like this of our own men had met each other, and in the dark they were shooting at each other. They killed about 40 of our own men.
Oh.
And of course, we thought, man, we're in for it. Real hell. So I get ashore at Kiska, follow orders, proceed east till I meet the enemy. About 5-6 hours later, we're over in Kiska Harbor in the Japanese camp. I called the admiral. I says, "There ain't nobody here." "They're all gone."
So they didn't ever fly over and notice that there were no people there?
Yeah.
Didn't know until they hit the beach.
You heard that story. They all got out by submarine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Took 5,000 out by submarine.
So I guess you'd long since stopped patrolling there and trying to soften them up, so they just went undetected.
Well, they carried that softening up exercise for quite a while just before the invasion.
But they were just softening up the one lone dog that got left behind, huh? So did you spend much time on Kiska on the ground then?
Oh, it was probably a week before I could get out.
That's about how much time we spent there last year.
God forsaken Ottawa.
It's pretty chilly and windy there.
Did you take any souvenirs home with you?
Did you take any souvenirs home with you?
No, I don't think. Well, sort of. I stole the .45 that they issued me.
Oh.
And the carbine.
Did you want me to turn that off and then delete that part?
We won't send any marshals after you.
Statute of limitations, I think, ran out.
So you went on, after you left the Aleutians, you went down to, where did you end up there?
Whidbey Island.
Oh, you went back to Whidbey.
Yeah, that's where I put my squadron together.
Uh-huh. The VPB 144?
Yeah.
And then where did you head off to?
Annawatok.
What'd you do there? Were you part of a battle there or the aftermath?
We were flying patrols.
Okay.
And bombing Wake Island.
Was that in the PV 1 and 2?
That was in the PVs.
PVs.
Yeah.
So you left your PBY back in Whidbey?
I don't know what ever happened to my PBYs. I could care less.
You know, we have a PBY in Anchorage at the Aviation History Museum. It's really only a shell of one. It was found on the Alaska Peninsula, but it's an impressive airplane, you know, due to its size and shape and, you know, what it did. It's Alaskans really like it.
I think that was probably the one that was a great big helicopter picked it up from someplace.
Dago Lake.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I don't know whose airplane that was, but yeah, it's a very prominent feature at the Anchorage Airport there. So, okay, then you went to Annawatok, and then were you discharged after that?
No, after Annawatok, the war ended, we went out to Tinian.
Okay.
And that's where I abandoned the squadron. In fact, what we did, we started up, the end of the runway in Tinian went off of about a 300-foot cliff into the ocean. And the orders were to start the engines up, get out of the cockpit, and let the airplanes all go in the water. One by one, 15 PV-2s went into the sea. Then we went home.
But then they flew you out some other way, or took you by ship probably, right?
I flew out somewhere other, I don't remember how.
So how did you feel about doing that, dumping those airplanes over the side?
Well, that airplane wasn't the best one in the world, and I wasn't too unhappy to see them go.
What, do you remember what the problems were with it?
In a high-speed diving turn, the skin would peel off the wings.
Well, that's a problem.
That's another story. When we were stationed at Annawatok, we went down to bomb a Japanese-held island called Ponape. And we were starting to make a run on a water tower, which I was ready to destroy to stop their water supply. As we got close to that, the water tower opened up with 40 millimeters right at us. I had to get the hell out of there and made this real steep, fast, we were going about 350 miles an hour. And the skin on the left-hand wing all just peeled off.
Oh,
we had to throw everything out of the airplane to get home.
So seeing that airplane go over the side of the cliff didn't break your heart at all after that? So did you spend a four-year, you were more than 4 years in the Navy. How many years did you spend in the Navy?
22.
Oh, you spent 22 in there. Oh, that's right. What did you end up doing after World War II?
Went to work.
You went to work? What kind of work did you do?
I ended up at a glass and glazing business with a friend of mine in Monterey, California.
Oh.
That was in 58.
Oh, in 58?
Well, he retired around 58.
Oh, okay. So what were you doing with the Navy after World War II ended?
Come again?
What were you doing with the Navy after World War II ended?
Oh. I went to a school in Rhode Island for training stupid reserve officers. Oh. Ex-reserve officers. We had to go through training to learn how to be a Naval Academy graduate.
Oh.
So to speak.
So that must have been pretty boring after all you've been through in World War II.
Well, it was something to do. After that, I went to the Pentagon, spent 3 years in intelligence. Then I went with a squadron which carried atomic weapons. Went to Albuquerque, New Mexico for training in the atomic bomb. I think that was about the end of it. I went into... I did end up as executive officer of a training base in Florida. And then I went to Anti-Submarine Defense Forces, Atlantic Fleet in Norfolk. That's where I retired.
Can we pause there?
Run out of tape.
You used up the tape, yeah. Are you tired out? Should we give you a break?
I'm fine.
I won't keep at you too long here.
That's fine. I'm no problem.
Janice, you put the tape in.
I'm going to drive my daughter out of the house. I'm going to light up. Open the back door.
So I was curious, after all that flying you did in World War II, did you continue to fly?
You sure picked the good stories. We came to Seattle. And I decided I should have a private pilot's license. So I go to the Federal Aeronautics Administration and I had my logbook. Well, Bill, you don't have to take a flight examination. Your logbook will take care of that. But you do have to take a 50-question multiple choice examination. Okay, so I go in the room, sit down. 50 questions. I get through, I hand it to the inspector. He said, "Bill, you got 2 right out of the 50. He said, "I don't think you better fly it until you learn the rules and forget it." Military flying and private flying, you know, it's entirely different. So I never got a license.
Obviously, you knew how to fly.
Yeah, I rented a little seaplane on Lake Union and took my wife in it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Did you miss it?
Not really.
Probably went on and had a family and kind of hard to keep flying anyway. I'd like
to ask you about. One was, I kind of wanted to hear about this, where this flight happened when you were in a Hellcat.
Whidbey Island.
That's where it was.
A friend of mine flew in with a Hellcat. I asked him if I could take it up for a little spin. Sure, go ahead. So he said, "Bill, you better read the handbook before you take it out." I said, "I know, I'm a fly sticker." So I got 5,000 feet. I told my wife I was going to give her a demonstration of aerobatics. So she was standing on the bank up at Whidbey Island outside of our house. I waved to her and I went up. And I did loops and spins and rolls and everything. Well, to get rid of some altitude, I decided to put it into a spin, which gets you down real fast. I'm looking at the altimeter on mine, 4,000, 3,000, 2,000, 1,000. Well, it's about time to pull out, Bill. So I kick and pull, and nothing happened. Just kept on spinning. So I got up, undid the safety belt, got up, let the canopy come back. I was going to jump. And I stood up, and just then the airplane stopped its spin, came out by itself. I reached down, pulled the stick. Came out about 10 feet above the water, and I could see my wife waving. Later she said, "Honey, that was sure a good show."
Did you ever tell her about the terror in your heart when you were trying to...
Well, what I found out, if I'd read the handbook, it said, "Don't put the Hellcat in the left-hand turn spin. It won't come up."
Well, if she'd only known, she probably would have been terrified the whole time you were gone.
Oh, boy.
Wondering what was happening with you. Now, did I understand that you actually got qualified for carrier landings?
Yeah, that's sort of a stupid thing. I was executive officer of a student carrier training field. And one night, a whole bunch of the pilots were all having a big party, and they said, "Bill, you tell these students how to do this and how to do that, but you've never done it yourself. Come on, no way." So they all, "Come on." So, okay. So they put me in an SNJ, a low-wing monoplane, to go out and make 5 landings on a carrier, which qualifies you. After the 10th attempt, the captain calls me up, says, "Bill, I'll give you one more chance." On the 10th landing, I was able to catch a wire. That was my carrier training.
That's not an easy thing to do, is it? That's obviously not an easy thing to do.
No, it isn't. I have a little card up there someplace. Carrier qualified.
Well, I don't want to keep you any longer. I've been having you talk for quite a long time, but I wondered if there were any other things that, any other memories about the Aleutians.
You've done a hell of a job.
I do. I really do. Do you have any other memories of the Aleutians that you want to share with us today?
You covered them all.
Although I know you said you never want to go back to the Aleutians again, were you happy you had an opportunity to be there and make a contribution?
Happy to be there. You move with you?
No, I mean happy that you were able to be part of that portion of World War II and portion of history.
Yeah, what else is there to die for?
There's another experience. Sitka.
On Sitka?
Yeah, where he tried to hike across the
Oh.
Yeah. Is that in the ocean?
No, but Sitka, I know where Sitka is. It was one of the bases there, too. You were on Sitka?
Yeah, we were. We went up for advanced base operations.
Uh-huh.
At one time, yeah.
What happened there?
Boy, you're in for a good story. You've heard of Baranof Island.
Yes.
That's what Sitka's on. Nobody had ever crossed Baranof Island. All the parties that started out either were never heard from again, or they turned back. So one Memorial Day weekend, one of my co-pilots was a mountain climber. He says, "Bill, you and Doc Jones and I are going to figure out a way to cross Baranof Island." So we went up and did an aerial survey, and we saw a likely passage which had what they call a saddle in it, which went down to Baranof Lake on the east side. So that's where we're going to go. So we pull into the access to that trail. Make a long story short, at the end of the first day, we had just traveled to the base of the mountain. Muskeg, devil claws, mosquitoes, deer flies. Okay, so we camped there that night, started to climb the next morning. After about half a day, we were about halfway up the mountain. We spent the night on a ledge of the mountain. Next day, we start to climb, we get up to the top. And to go down, the other side was all glacier, ice. Jack, the mountain climber, said, "Bill, we'll put you in the center. And don't, whatever you do, don't ever lean back. Keep perpendicular to the ice." About halfway down the glacier, I lost my nerve. My back came off. Jack played out the line, saved my life. But my pack and the rifle was just tumbled down the mountain. We get down to the bottom of the glacier. And to make a long story short, the PBY was supposed to land over on Baranof Lake and pick us up in 2 days. A week later, they were sending search parties out for us. There were two ways to make the the trip. You either stand in the water and follow the stream, glacier stream, which froze your feet off, or hit the land and fight the devil claws in the alder wood with machetes. I think it was probably close to a week. We saw the PBY still looking for us. Doc Jones, the other guy, and I laid down to die. We were had it. Our arms and legs were swollen up with bites. And Jack, the mountain climber, went down to the edge of the lake. He saw the PBY land. He flashed them with a mirror. They came ashore, picked him up, sent stretchers for the other guy and me, and we spent a week in the hospital.
Oh no.
Oh, well.
Anyway, it was written up in the Sitka Sentinel as the first party to ever cross Guernica Island.
Well, at least you are in the annals of history there. How much food did you take with you on that hike? Certainly not enough, right?
There wasn't enough because I lost most of it when I fell.
So did that count as leave? Hmm? Did that count as leave?
I guess.
Probably would have traded that out, wouldn't you?
Well, we were so late, I was absent over leave.
Oh. Are there any other stories you think we missed?
No.
I'm sure there's lots of them, really.
Yeah.
What did you do for adventure after you left the service? What did you do for adventure? You had so many of them, it seems like that was a part of your life. Or were you happy to have things quiet for you?
Things are pretty dull around here now. I keep busy fooling with this thing. I built that computer.
Huh. Really? Yeah. Wow, that's impressive.
Well, your nickname in the service must have been Lucky. It couldn't have been anything else.
Nothing else.
Wild Bill.
Yeah.
And Wild Bill.
He did learn how to put together an atomic bomb.
Mm, really?
Yeah. By memory, I think. And they had to learn how to do it.
Wow.
When he was in New Mexico, assignment.
So you learned to put together an atomic bomb as part of...
Yeah, that was part of my training down to Albuquerque, New Mexico. In fact, that lower left picture there, that's the certificate for qualifying as a bomb commander.
Well, the Special Weapons Project?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to learn how to take the thing apart, put it together, in case it got hit by an anti-aircraft fire or something like that.
Yeah, we should go look at... Are those some of your licenses up there up above that?
Yeah.
Nice. And is that your PBY over on the right?
Well, that's a PBY.
That's one of them. Is that you as a little boy?
That's my son.
That's your son?
Yeah, I lost him when he was 6 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He looks a lot like you.
He's smart.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened to him?
Some sort of a brain tumor.
Oh.
They never actually found out what it was.
Oh, that's a shame. Cute little guy. So it looks like fishing became one of your passions.
Well,
later,
I was just going to bring that up. After I first came out here, I did a lot of fishing. 4 or 5 trips to Yakutat.
Oh.
Out to the Olympic Peninsula rivers. Well, I gave all my gear away. I can't get around on the rivers anymore.
Really?
I can't get in and out of the boats.
Oh. It looks like you weren't, wasn't too long ago you were out fishing. It looks like you weren't, it wasn't too long ago you were out fishing.
Oh, that's probably back, 4 or 5 years.
Oh.
That's on the Cowlitz River down southern Washington.
Oh, okay. Have they enlisted you to give presentations now and again, other than your History Channel contribution? Have you done other kinds of presentations?
Oh, a few of them around Gig Harbor here.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I would think you'd be a real celebrity around here, be in big demand. If you were in Alaska, they'd have you booked up every day.
One of the things that happened was stationed in Seattle before the squadron went north. I was flying over the Tacoma Narrows Bridge one day, and I had the radio on just listening to the news. And all of a sudden it says, "News bulletin, Tacoma Narrows Bridge is falling down." I backed over and I watched the thing fall in the water.
That was that harmonic motion that tore it up?
Galloping Gertie.
Yeah.
I watched that.
Wow. When was that? Was it that long ago? The only reason I knew about it is physics classes, you know, they went over it.
November 7th.
Wow. Yeah, she told me to keep my speed up going over it. She was afraid we would have trouble here.
We got
don't need to recreate some history.
That new bridge you came across.
Well, you will come across when you go back.
Oh, the new one. New span.
But the old one you came was 1950, then the new one is 2007.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That new bridge is the greatest thing that ever happened to this town.
Really?
Yeah.
Because then you had two-way traffic both ways, more lanes.
It used to be backed up for hours.
Or if there's an accident, it'll shut down for an hour.
Is there anything else you can think of that I forgot to ask you?
Well, you sure did a good job. I can't think of a thing.
I'm letting you off the hook because I probably have about 80 more questions, but I'll let you go. I really appreciate you spending the time with us today.
I was wondering if there's any pictures here at all that you might be interested in. If so, holler.
Yeah, this is a nice one. I both of those are nice pictures.
You want them?
Yeah.
You got a few minutes?
Sure. This is Bill Thies' day. We got nothing but time.
I have a flash drive, Janice.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
That would be great.
That would be the easiest way to do it.
Would that be okay?
Make a copy? To put a copy in?
Yeah, if we could get him up to Alaska, we'd have an auditorium packed to hear him. Yeah.
Is it the organization?
Where was that important, did you say?
Thumb drive?
What do you want to do?
To put a copy of the photo on the thumb drive.
I
say printing paper. He wouldn't have to print it if 50, we just
50 chance we'll go in there.
Put that in one of those holes.
Okay. There we go. Anyway, they had a couple of articles, full feature articles.
Oh, really?
Of him.
I could have checked.
You might check with them. They have a land piece. And,
they have offices here in
Yeah, they have offices over by Kimball Drive. If you go back up Pioneer, you could turn the last street before you get to the freeway is Kimball Drive. Not too far from Burger King, across the street from it, I guess.
I probably don't know where any of that is.
Yeah, I know.
Which one would this be?
We do have an iPhone, though, so we
can... Oh, okay. But it's
it'll say Store and Go? Peninsula Gateway. Store and Go, or...
Every Wednesday they come out with a paper.
This is the thumb drive. Well, I don't understand these.
Oh, those are what's on the thumb drive. Those are what's on the thumb drive already.
Oh.
So you don't have to do anything with those, of course.
Well, maybe it didn't come through.
I think it was around 99 when they had.
Did you already copy?
I thought I did.
Around 1999.
Yeah. Oh, just cool. Stupid online jobs that I hope no one calls me about.
Oh, you mean
you fly online?
Yeah, it had to be because she was still chairman of Christian Women's Club.
But you have to make it look like you're
98 and 2000.
Maybe I did.
That period of time. Big thing.
And
right when they published it, the
book
they published it.
There it is. There it is, right. Well, that's all you need, huh?
Well, I don't know. You have any more pictures?
They're on an article right here.
Oh, that's really nice.
And he's talking right there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, yep, excellent. Thank you.
They have a chance.
Yeah, right.
I tried to send those photos yesterday.
Bob Larson is fun. Developed all kinds of stuff at Boeing and was in an interview and, that was posted
Excellent.
In the History
Thank
Channel.
You.
I don't know if it is anymore, but he's since died. He looked healthy as a horse to me. It was just amazing when people die or don't die.
He did in the videos, yeah, that I saw where the two of them were together.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah.
I was there when
they, they were
it was 2005. At the airport hangar up in, I forget what county it was.
Is there anything here you want?
Oh, so where did these pictures come from?
I don't know.
Oh, those are great.
That's Umnak.
That's Umnak?
Yeah.
Landing in the mud, huh?
Yeah.
It doesn't even look like there was any Marston mat
there.
Well,
there was a Marston mat.
Oh, there was.
Yeah,
it's
all covered with mud.
Spraying up between... Oh, man.
Copies of those?
Can we get copies of these, too?
Sure. If you got time.
That's a beautiful picture.
Yeah. There's my crew.
Oh, that's a great picture.
Larson isn't in there.
So that was pre-Larson, huh?
That's the guy that got sick and found a zero.
Raptist?
George Raptus, yeah. This is Harvey, the guy who was always drunk.
This guy here?
Yeah. Came up with the 45 he gave
up.
That's him.
So he's in the lower middle. Okay.
Just gotta find it, huh?
Can we stick this back in one of his ports?
Which one of these do you want?
Okay, I want to write myself a note about the guys in that one photo. So, let's see.
I'm my dad. He just finished having his interview.
You want to go back? Or?
Okay.
You want to copy of that?
Yeah, I would love to have a copy of that. So there's, see, there's you, and then an unknown guy, and then, oh, thank you. Oh, these come out really nice. Now, this one's Raptist, right?
Yeah.
And okay. Hold on, let me catch up with you. And then this, tell me this fella's name again.
Harvey. I don't remember the names of the other ones.
Okay. Is this Gary's?
That's Gary's, yeah.
Which commendation were you getting at that
point? Navy Cross.
Navy Cross.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me see here.
All right.
Oh, just a minute. My dad wants me. Just a minute.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I'm right here, Dad.
Want to give me a hot cup of coffee, please?
Were you able to put that one on the drive?
Has it on the thumb drive.
Oh, okay. I think this is hers right here. Can I just pull it out?
Not yet.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll have to do it down here.
Okay.
Now you can take it out.
Okay.
Huh?
So you're on email?
Yeah.
Can we get hooked up on email?